Hello again and welcome to Simply Scottish, the long-running podcast of Scottish music and culture. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. Today I want to share with you some interesting things you may not know about Scottish naturalist and conservationist John Muir, as well as read to you some passages from his essay on one of the natural wonders of the world, the Grand Canyon. For a few minutes, let's continue listening to the Scott Wood Band. And don't be shy, get up and do a dance to it. The song's called Barber Avenue. Perhaps the most rewarding thing about being a podcaster is hearing from listeners all over the world who amazingly find the episodes I put out and get in touch with me to tell me how they were moved or inspired by them. Nowadays, I start each show by mentioning a few listeners who have reached out since the last episode. Michael in Brunswick, Georgia, has recently been diving into his genealogy to learn more about his Celtic ancestors. In my search for Scottish information, I stumbled upon your podcast, he says, and I have to say I absolutely love it. It's a perfect mix of Scottish history mixed with Scottish music and connecting Scotland to the USA. Well, thank you, Michael, and I'm sure you'll enjoy today's episode about John Muir and the Grand Canyon. Julie in Dongola, Illinois, recently found the show by searching Audible for something Scottish. Yes, Simply Scottish is available through Amazon's audiobook service, Audible. Something to keep in mind for those who enjoy listening to their books. Julie says, I'm now listening daily. This is exactly what I've been looking for. I've been searching for things to help educate me about Scotland, and you cover a little bit of everything, which is precisely what I wanted. I'm hungry to learn all that I can about Scotland, and I desperately want to make a visit there. You know, Julie, your comments make me think it would be pretty awesome to organize a trip to Scotland where I meet and interact with Simply Scottish listeners just like you, maybe even visit places or attractions as a group. I know COVID has made a mess of things in recent years, but I'm overdue for a visit to my homeland, and it would be great to connect with listeners for it. If you're out there listening and think that's a good idea, let me know. I'd like to gauge the interest. For those wondering about my recommendations for places to visit in Scotland, look up the two-episode series I released back in 2014 called Andrew's 10 Favourite Scottish Destinations. It's a list you won't find in any guidebook, a personal itinerary of my favorite places in Scotland. I also heard from some folks who heard me on national radio in the United States this past week. I had the opportunity to do a full hour on In the Market with Janet Parshall, nationally syndicated to over 700 stations through the Moody Radio Network. Officially, the topic was an article I wrote for the American Spectator on parents' rights and education, part of the work I do in my day job as a senior fellow at the Discovery Institute. Unofficially, though, the topic of the hour was Scotland. Janet's grandfather hails from Campbellton, on the Kintyre Peninsula in Scotland, and she takes her Scottish ancestry very seriously. She played classic Scottish music, including the bagpipes, and we talked about Scottish poet Robert Burns, and how I got started doing a Scottish radio program so many years ago. It really was an entertaining hour of radio. I've posted links to it on the Simply Scottish profile at Facebook and Twitter, and I've also added it to my website, andrewmcdermott.org. So you can look it up, and I think you'll enjoy listening to it. Michelle in Centralia, Illinois, found me through Janet Parshall, as did Sean in El Paso, Texas. So thank you to both of you folks for reaching out to me. I appreciate hearing from listeners, as I said. I know it's not extremely common to enjoy a piece of content out there and get in touch with the creator of it, so it's really cool that you've done that, and I appreciate everyone who makes contact with me. If you do want to get in touch, you can email me anytime. Tell me why you love Scotland and what interests you about all things Scottish. My email address is andrew@simplyscottish.com. That's andrew@simplyscottish.com. And if you enjoy what you hear on the program, please leave Simply Scottish a positive review and rating on Apple Podcasts. That helps me reach new listeners and stay relevant on the world's largest and oldest podcast directory. That's Apple Podcasts, which I believe you can get to on your smartphone or on your computer, wherever you access your podcasts. Now on to Mr. Muir. You probably already know of John Muir, or you've seen that classic photo of him sporting his long beard, sitting on a rock overlooking a beautiful lake. I discussed John Muir a bit on a previous episode called The Scots in America, so you can look that up. But today we're going to go beyond the usual profile of him. Muir was born in Dunbar, a lovely town in Scotland, in 1838. He and I have several things in common, actually, the first of which is that we both emigrated to the United States with our families at age 11. He to farm life in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and me to the sunny shores of the Rio Grande Valley of South Texas. 11 is a great age to discover a new country, I think. When he wasn't helping with the family farm, Muir and his younger brother roamed the fields and woods of the countryside. He studied geology and botany in college, but eventually left for what he called the University of the Wilderness. He discovered the Sierra Mountains in California and would wander for weeks through these mountains, reflecting on humankind's relationship with nature and nature's God. "Everyone needs beauty as well as bread," he mused in 1869. "Places to play in and pray in, where nature may heal and cheer to give strength to body and soul alike." In a few minutes, we'll look at an incident that happened to Muir that changed the entire trajectory of his life. First, back to music. This is brand new music, actually, not even released yet as I record this, from Glasgow-based traditional musician Tina Jordan Rees. Her debut flute and whistle album is out June 2022. The tune is an original medley, Ducks at Luss and House 108. listening to Simply Scottish. That was music from Tina Jordan Rees, R-E-E-S, Tina Jordan Rees. Well, John Muir is credited with the creation of the National Park System in America, as well as the Sierra Club. He taught generations of Americans to appreciate what they had on their doorsteps, the amazing wilderness they could access and protect. President Roosevelt was deeply influenced by Muir's work. Some years after Yosemite National Park was established, Roosevelt went on a camping trip with John Muir at Yosemite, which inspired the president to protect over 148 million acres of forest reserves, as well as the foundation of 5 new national parks and over a dozen national monuments during his political career. In John Muir, we get to see what happens to someone raised with a strict Protestant upbringing at home, who then discovers the freedom and majesty of his Creator in the Cathedral of Nature. One episode in Muir's life stands out in this regard. And it also relates to a topic I've been studying for years, technology. After coming to America, Muir had dabbled with inventions, and showed quite a bit of promise in that area. He viewed human inventions as improving the lot of humankind, so he considered a job in machinery and technology a high calling and a service to humanity. But Muir had an accident that would be a pivotal moment in his life. Working in a machine shop in Indianapolis, where he impressed the owners, a file slipped and pierced Muir's right eye. His sight drained not only from that eye, but also temporarily blinded his other eye too. As Mark Stoll puts it in his excellent Sierra Club essay, God and John Muir, plunged into despair, depression, and literal darkness, Muir experienced something of a conversion as his sight slowly returned, and he came away from the accident inspired with a new sense of purpose. When a doctor first told him his sight would return, he wrote Mrs. Carr, a good friend, saying, "Now had I risen from the grave." Convalescing in bed with a brochure on the Yosemite Valley in his lap, he mused about the industrial accident that nearly robbed him of the ability to investigate the glory of God's creation. When the shop owners came to offer him partnership in the firm, after some consideration, he declined. In a letter to his friend, he explained, "God has to nearly kill us sometimes to teach us lessons." Much later, he remembers, "As soon as I got out into heaven's light, I started on another long excursion, making haste with all my heart to store my mind with the Lord's beauty, and thus be ready to any fate, light or dark. And it was from this time that my long, continuous wanderings may be said to have fairly commenced. I bade adieu to all my mechanical inventions, determined to devote the rest of my life to the study of the inventions of God." Wow, I've been thinking along those same lines recently. One of the things I do with my writing and podcasting on technology is encourage people to live authentically with their technology. I help them renew their understanding of tech, reset their boundaries with the technology in their lives, and then better release that God-given potential they have to others around them. I talk about God also as the original technician. And here we have Muir, at this point in his life, 1867, having a similar realization and changing the course of his life. One of the places Muir visited on his many travels through America was the Grand Canyon. I pulled my Muir volume off the shelf and plan to read to you some excerpts of his essay on the Grand Canyon. But first, how about a few minutes of Celtic rock from the 90s? I literally pulled this one out of my Simply Scottish CD archives. From their 1997 album, Pick of the Litter, this is the Scottish group Wolfstone, with the catchy tune, Heart and Soul.
It's in the rhythm of the dancer, in the standard flag unfurled. It's in a bright eternal answer, in every child across the world. Heart and soul, heart and soul. It's in the rhythm of the dancer. Sweetly from the honest tongue, with music there to melt the snow, rising from the bed of old. Heart and
like beauty of the northern skies. Heart and soul, heart and soul, it's in the rhythm of a dancer. Oh, you see, it's always with the dancer. It's in the standard flag of China across the world. Heart and soul, heart and soul, oh, it's in the rhythm of a dancer.
You're listening to Simply Scottish. On this episode, we're discussing Scottish naturalist and conservationist John Muir, and I'm sharing with you some of his observations of the Grand Canyon. Originally appearing in Century magazine in November 1902, Muir's essay, The Grand Canyon of the Colorado, recounts his experience of the Grand Canyon in Arizona. This jumped out at me because I visited the Grand Canyon with my family during the summer of 2021. We did a road trip from Washington State to Texas, and this natural wonder of the world was a highlight for the whole family. Here are some excerpts from Muir's essay. Happy nowadays is the tourist, with Earth's wonders, new and old, spread invitingly open before him, and a host of able workers, making everything easy. First of the wonders of the Great West to be brought within reach of the tourist were the Yosemite and the Big Trees, on the completion of the first transcontinental railway. Next came the Yellowstone, and icy Alaska, by the northern roads, and last the Grand Canyon of the Colorado, which naturally the hardest to reach, has now become, by a branch of the Santa Fe, the most accessible of all. When I first heard of the Santa Fe trains running to the edge of the Grand Canyon of Arizona, I was troubled with thoughts of the disenchantment likely to follow. But last winter, when I saw those trains crawling along through the pines of the Coconino Forest, and close up to the brink of the chasm at Bright Angel, I was glad to discover that in the presence of such stupendous scenery, they are nothing. The locomotives and trains are mere beetles and caterpillars, and the noise they make is as little disturbing as the hooting of an owl in the lonely woods. In a dry, hot, monotonous, forested plateau, seemingly boundless, you come suddenly and without warning upon the abrupt edge of a gigantic sunken landscape of the wildest, most multitudinous features. And those features, sharp and angular, are made out of flat beds of limestone and sandstone, forming a spiry, jagged, gloriously colored mountain range, countersunk in a level gray plain. It's a hard job to sketch it, even in scrawniest outline. And try as I may, not in the least sparing myself, I cannot tell the hundredth part of the wonders of its features. The side canyons, gorges, alcoves, cloisters, and amphitheaters of vast sweep and depth, carved in its magnificent walls. The throng of great architectural rocks it contains, resembling castles, cathedrals, temples, and palaces, towered and spired and painted, some of them nearly a mile high, yet beneath one's feet. All this, however, is less difficult than to give any idea of the impression of wild primeval beauty and power one receives in merely gazing from its brink. The view down the gulf of color and over the rim of its wonderful wall, more than any other view I know, leads us to think of our Earth as a star, with stars swimming in light, every radiant spire pointing the way to the heavens. But it's impossible to conceive what the canyon is, or what impression it makes, from descriptions or pictures, however good. Naturally, it is untellable, even to those who have seen something perhaps a little like it on a small scale in this same plateau region. One's most extravagant expectations are indefinitely surpassed, though one expects much from what is said of it as the biggest chasm on Earth. So big it is that all other big things, Yosemite, the Yellowstone, the pyramids, Chicago, all would be lost if tumbled into it. Naturally enough, illustrations as to size are sought for among other canyons like or unlike it, with the common result of worse confounding confusion. The prudent keep silence. It was once said that the Grand Canyon could put a dozen Yosemites in its vest pocket. In trying to describe the great pines and sequoias of the Sierra, I have often thought that if one of those trees could be set by itself in some city park, its grandeur might there be impressively realized. While in its home forests, where all magnitudes are great, the weary, satiated traveler sees none of them truly. It is so with these majestic rock structures. Wildness so godful, cosmic, primeval, bestows a new sense of Earth's beauty and size. Not even from high mountains does the world seem so wide, so like a star in glory of light on its way through the heavens. But the colors, the living, rejoicing colors, chanting morning and evening in chorus to heaven. Whose brush or pencil, however lovingly inspired, can give us these? And if paint is of no effect, what hope lies in pen work? Only this: some may be incited by it to go and see for themselves. The dawn, as in all the pure dry desert country, is ineffably beautiful. And when the first level sunbeams sting the domes and spires, with what a burst of power the big wild days begin. The dead and the living, rocks and hearts alike, awake and sing the new old song of creation. All the rocks, as if wild with life, throb and quiver and glow in the glorious sunburst, rejoicing. Every rock temple then becomes a temple of music, every spire and pinnacle an angel of light and song, shouting color hallelujahs. Muir goes on in his essay to describe the Grand Canyon sunsets and storms, as well as his experience going down the Bright Angel Trail, and some description of the people, animals, and vegetation that have made it home. He finishes by remarking on the geologic richness of the site. In no other part of this continent are the wonders of geology, the records of the world's Auld Lang Syne, more widely opened or displayed in higher piles, he says. He describes the layers of rocks as a collection of stone books filled with myriad forms of flora and fauna, lavishly illustrated, taking us back into the midst of the life of a past infinitely remote. Well, if you haven't been to the Grand Canyon, now's the time to plan your trip. What's your excuse? What do you have to lose? If you were thinking of booking Disney World or Hollywood, change your plans. Let your kids discover the wonder of a different kind of theme park. And by the way, Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico is every bit as wondrous as the Grand Canyon, just in a very different way. So add that to your list as well, if you haven't experienced Carlsbad Caverns National Park. In the show notes for this episode, which you can find at simplyscottish.com, I include links to some Grand Canyon resources, including an audio reading of Muir's Grand Canyon essay, in full. That's under episode notes at simplyscottish.com. And if you're thinking of getting a copy of Muir's writing, the book I'm reading from today is actually a nice hardcover collection of his work. It's called Muir, Nature Writings, published by the Library of America. Well, that's all I have for this episode. Get in touch with your questions and your comments anytime at andrew@simplyscottish.com. As always, I'm blessed to be with you and thankful that you're tuning in. We'll close with music from Scottish singer Alistair Ogilvie from his album July Moon. Featuring supporting vocals from Capper Cayley lead singer Karen Matheson, this is Clasping Sea. Join me again for your next virtual trip to Scotland. Until then, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.
To the sky, I'll seek and I'll find you, bring you back again. As I know, and sepia toned memories and stories untold in a box full of time, a fresh face smile, you pursued her in style to meet in the air, and it goes round again. You're over the grasping sea, looking out to the sky. I'll seek and I'll find you. Looking out to the sky, I'll seek and I'll find you, bring you back without measure. Another day dawns, and we're at one with the world. The shadows of light of the sun through the trees. The air is so still here where you used to